Okay, well, you probably have heard the phrase, another fine mess you've got me into. Who was it who said that?
Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy, that's right. So Ollie said to Stan many times, and you probably know, this is a fine mess you've gotten us into. Well, it might be true to say, this is a fine mess I've got myself into. Certainly that was true for Lot as he headed for Sodom. There he ended up in a mess he'd not bargained for. Well, just to review, on the 18th of September, we considered the parting of Abraham and Lot. Both had large flocks and the land could not support them. So Abraham, the senior partner, graciously gave his nephew Lot the choice as to where to go. And what did Lot do? He chose for himself. He saw that the grass was green, literally, and thought, with all my flocks, this will suit me just fine. Yet that green pasture land was near the wicked city of Sodom. Is that a wise move, Lot? There's no indication that Lot prayed. He didn't seek the Lord's wisdom. He was not concerned about the wisest course of action, which of course is the best course of action. He chose for his own personal short-term gain. He did not look ahead. He did not consider the consequences. He let his heart govern his mind. He took the gain now and to hell with tomorrow. He became blind to anything else. He had tunnel vision. There are many who foolishly swap eternity for time, who foolishly exchange their Bible for TV or the phone or something else, and their soul for material gain now. The blindness that came with Lot really showed in a kind of attitude. I can manage, I'm able, I can control my life and where it's going. He was like the prodigal son who thought he had it all planned out. He thought, I'll be fine. And when he got to that foreign land, can you remember what happened? There was a famine. He wasn't counting on that. No work, no food, he became destitute. God has a way of always bringing something there, consequences. When the Lord made this world, he built into it governing principles. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. Proverbs, again and again, they're there in black and white in Proverbs. And they show the connection between heart motive and hard consequences. Heart motive and hard consequences. The wealth of the greedy slips through their fingers. A greedy man brings trouble to his family. There are short-term consequences and there are long-term consequences. The Lord has ordained that sin and folly will bear its ugly fruit. And today we don't like the language of cause and effect. It's not fashionable to think in those terms. And why is that? Because it puts responsibility back onto me for my actions. And we don't like that. A mother was telling me the other day how her daughter has anger problems. And her thoughts were, you know, psychotherapy and counselling. And yet, she'd explained her family situation on a number of visits. She doesn't seem to bat an eyelid when she explains that she has no husband and yet she has several children by different men, different fathers. Is there a connection? Yes, certainly. We can't see it directly, and therefore we don't want to see it. But God has built in that connection into the world that we live in. And I've met so many families, and I can look back on my own life and see times when God's law is disregarded, his good law, we live with an almost daily string of disasters. Drink too much, eat too much, speak too much, live immorally, live unfaithfully, disregard the law of the road or the law of the land, be driven by greed, live selfishly and proudly, and all things, many things, will go wrong. The fool is quick to quarrel, we are told, and how much quarreling is there? Hatred stirs up dissension, and the mouth of the fool invites ruin. And a cruel man brings trouble on himself. He who sows wickedness reaps trouble, and so on, and so on. You see the connection between attitude and consequences? trouble for himself, for his family, for his children, and so on. Very clearly, Paul says, do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. As Christians, we should be very different. Because we understand what God's will is, we should be able to enjoy the world that he made, because we do not go into excess. We are careful to do things as God has determined and with moderation. Yet, as Christians living in the world, just as Jesus said, he said, we will have trouble. Christians who sin will find that there are the same consequences, whether it is being greedy, lazy, looking at pornography, whatever it is, there are consequences there. When King David committed adultery with Bathsheba, he had it all worked out, and yet the son born died as a baby. David quickly saw it as the Lord's right anger against his sin, and he confessed and changed his ways. And when Christians sin, we have consequences. But there is a difference. For when we sin and we face the consequences, the Lord will use that resultant suffering to discipline his children. And in his many mercies, sometimes he brings a way out. He might bring a way of rescue, or he might not. He will ultimately rescue later, because his honour is at stake. For salvation is of the Lord. And Lot was rescued later and escaped through the flames, which is not the way to enter heaven, as we're told later. So let's consider briefly three things this morning: the mess Lot found himself in, the gracious rescue God provided, and the gracious rescue that the Lord offers today. So firstly, the mess Lot found himself in. Lot is drawn gradually from being near Sodom to being in Sodom to becoming part of Sodom's society. He hadn't watched out and forgot that sin creeps up slowly. A prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. Proverbs 22 and 27. Lot ended up in a mess, and by that time it was too late. The die had been set. He was too far in to see the trouble and come out. Well, Lot knew before he went to Sodom what kind of city it was. But I wonder when he discovered that actually this city was a captive city, a city captive to a foreign power. It was a city under the control of another state. It was a subjugated city, not free at all. And the way the world works is a history of oppression and subjugation. Kings against kings, city-states against city-states, trying to prey, overrun, and exploit their neighbours. That's how the world has been, and that's how it is, and will be. Large empires can bring widespread devastation, but they can also bring peace by suppressing the small-town oppressors. Large empires import and impose culture, language, taxes, and depending on the empire's religion, either tyranny or justice, either violence or peace. So let's think about the political landscape that Lot has found himself in here. We had the oppressors, didn't we? Do you remember verse 1? Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elazar, Kedialama, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goyim. The invaders were four kings, two of them no less than king of Shinar, which is Chaldea, which is a huge area, Iraq, and Elam, Persia. So large areas, yet they're probably not the emperors, they're probably local leaders, district leaders, who've come to set themselves up near Sodom. And like many cities in those days, they sought safety in a confederation of local kings. Verse 2, Bera, king of Sodom, Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, Shemeber, king of Zeboim, and the unnamed king of nearby Bela. Four kings against five kings. You don't have to remember their names, by the way. Okay, you're off that one. All these latter kings joined forces in the valley of Siddim, the Salt Sea. So we have the first murder in Genesis 4, and now we have the first account of war in Genesis 14. For 12 years they had been subject to Kedalama. And this had been predicted back in Genesis 9:29. The Sodomites came from Canaan, whom Noah had prophesied would serve Shem, from whom Elam descended. So this is working out a prophecy that you see back in chapter 9. And the Sodomites, wary of their subjection, rebelled in the 13th year. They denied tribute, attempted to shake off the yoke, and sought their freedoms. So what happens? Going through very quickly this section. In the 14th year, Kedorlaomer and the kings allied with him went out and defeated. And they were on the rampage. Kedorlaomer, driven by his own personal passions for conquest, and they conquer a large sway of land around the area. This is an evil coalition. And so the king of Sodom and the king of Gomorrah and others, fearing that their cities would be next in line for destruction, they marched out and drew up their battle lines in the valley of Siddim against Kedorlaomer and his attacking armies. But it didn't go well for them. You see what happened? Now the valley of Siddim was full of tar pits, and when the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, some of the men fell into them, and the rest fled to the hills. So it didn't go well at all. The city was taken. Verse 11, the four kings seized all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and their food and then went away. And here was a city of people that had become debauched in gluttony and excess, and together slid into gross sexual perversion. No wonder God's judgments had come. And the result is that Sodom is sacked. What about Lot? Was he safe? That would be the question to ask, wouldn't it? Verse 12. They also carried off Abraham's nephew Lot and his possessions, since he was living in Sodom. All things come to all alike, one might say. Despite the fact that he was a righteous man and Abraham's brother's son, Lot shared with his neighbours in this common disaster. In other words, being a godly man, which he was in essence, we might say, as a Christian, do we still experience and share in these things? Being a Christian does not exempt us from the troubles in this life when judgments come. Well, the city of sin is a cursed city. Sin destroys it, for it brings on itself the curse of God. And the curse of God is not something, the anger of God is not something that's coming later. It will come later, but the anger of God is being revealed now through history. And as God said in Psalm 107, he turned the fruitful land into salt waste because of the wickedness of those who lived there. So sin, one way or another, will result in suppression, misery, bitterness, and puts those guilty under a yoke. So Lot is paying the price for the foolish choice he made in moving into Sodom. He's a relation of Abraham. Why didn't he spend his time with Abraham? Wouldn't he have been better off in the tents, away from the city, with Abraham, away from the world and all its ways, God's holy people? No. And note as well that they took his goods. It was these goods that were the problem in the first place, wasn't it? He loved them. He thought about them. He wanted to protect them. And it was his goods, his flocks, that led him blindly into Sodom in the first place. So God took away that which he loved. So both the Christian and the non-Christian share in these common calamities. Yet when Christians do wrong, living without fear of the Lord who bought us, and we, if we do not correct our behaviour, we can expect God's judgments as well. That is why we are told, many among you are weak and sick, and a number of you have fallen asleep. 1 Corinthians 11. And James links sin and sickness for the Christian as well. And we don't kind of like to hear this sort of language, but he links the two together. And he says that actually, physical healing comes with forgiveness. And the medicine, of course, is that we should examine ourselves and judge ourselves, and that we would not come unto God's judgment. It doesn't mean that every sin can be traced back to, every sickness can be traced back to a particular sin, but there is a connection between sin and sickness. So that's the mess that Lot was in. But God, in his grace, provided a way of rescue. One who had escaped came and reported this to Abraham. He thought There's one person I can turn to who will help. Abraham's a godly man. I will go and seek him for help. And in fact, if you are a godly man or woman, people, when they're in need, will come to you for help. It's not the foolish who rescue the wise. No, it's the wise who rescue the foolish. God had, in his grace, provided an instrument of rescue, the rescuer, Abraham. And Abraham is described as the Hebrew. And that's because if you go back in the ancestral line, he was descended from Eber, which is where we get our word Hebrew from. When Abraham heard that his relative had been taken captive, he called out the 318 trained men born in his household and went in pursuit as far as Dan. Not a big thing, but just to let you know, that where's Dan come from? Wasn't Dan one of the tribes that came later? That's put in, isn't it, by Moses to help people understand where we're talking about. There's no such thing as Dan in those days. Abraham had only 318 men. Did they have weapons? Probably not many. Yet Abraham trusted in the Lord, and the Lord gave him victory. Upright Abraham chose to help the one who had brought this on himself and deserved to reap what he had sown. And that's the attitude of many people. Well, you've got your comeuppance. I'm not going to help you. You've made your bed, you have to lie in it. That's the kind of phrase, isn't it? Well, I was reading a book recently about lepers in an Indian mission, and they were taunted by local Hindus. "You're getting your just deserts for what you've done wrong," they said to these lepers, and walked off. Graham Staines, a Christian missionary, and his family spent 30 years looking after, caring, and relieving the suffering of these lepers. And what happened to Graham Staines? A gang of over 50 surrounded his car and burnt him alive with his two children. It's tearful stuff. If you want to read the book, there it is. The former president of India said that someone who spent years caring for patients of leprosy, instead of being thanked and appreciated as a role model, should be done to death, is a monumental aberration of tolerance and harmony. The killings belong to the world's inventory of black deeds. It was a shake-up for many in India. Well, Abraham came to rescue. Abraham, the great man, who didn't use his servants to do harm, but to do good. The other kings used their servants to do harm. Abraham was a good man, and in serving God, he sought to help others. Abraham was a wise man, for he thought that he needed to be a man of peace. Yet he's wise. To bring peace, you often have to have some strength. And he disciplined his servants for war, not knowing what situation he would find himself in, as we do in this world. A Christian is a peacemaker. It doesn't mean we're a pacifist. We should provide strength and protection to the weak and those in need in this sinful, suffering world. Abraham, as I said, was a wise man. During the night, Abraham divided his men. He divided his men like a master strategist to attack them, and he routed them, pursuing them as far as Hobah, north of Damascus. A long, long way north, he chased them. Abraham was faced with this huge task. He didn't give up part the way through or make excuses. He had resolve. He was a man of courage, a man of backbone. Remember what we had on the screen just now? Brother Andrew said, "Of course it is dangerous, but it's much more dangerous for us all if we don't." Don't say take care. Say take risks. Take risks. Well, he recovered all the goods and brought back his relative Lot and his possessions, together with the women and the other people. Without loss, it seems, to himself. We don't hear of any loss that he had. And that is because he did what God wanted him to do, and he saw the protection and success that the Lord brings. Lot, after all, was family. Twice we're told that he was his brother Lot. And the first sign of faith is that we care for our families. How often do I see people just leave members of the family to social services or to others? Just let them look after them. We're told, Paul says to Timothy, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So Abraham took that responsibility seriously. Well, when he returns, there are two kings there. Verse 17, after Abraham returned from defeating Kedorlaomer and the kings allied with him, the king of Sodom came out to meet him. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. So Abraham is before two kings. There's really interesting contrast between the two. One's king of Sodom, kind of the worldly king, and one's king of Salem, which is to become Jerusalem. And of course, Salem means peace. And he's the priest of God Most High. So what's going on here? Well, the king of Sodom, this worldly king, wants to pay him, wants to give him money. But Abraham won't take a penny. He's really saying, no, I trust God for everything. He brought me deliverance. I don't need money from you. I will not say my victory was helped by you or motivated by a reward of money and personal gain. How different from Lot he is. You see, when somebody wants to pay you, they're kind of buying into you. There is some link. So beware when people want to pay you for things. And we're told Abraham said to him, not even a thread or thong of a sandal, so that you'll never be able to say, I made Abraham rich. And if you have a lively faith, you're not going to be interested in worldly wealth and those things. A bit like when Naaman, the leper from the Aramean army, was healed through Elisha. Gehazi, that servant, Naaman was so glad to be healed. He said, look, I just want to give you something. Take some clothing and some food. And Elisha said, no, that's not the time to do that. But his servant Gehazi ran after Naaman and said, actually, I'd like some of that, please. And it ended up that the leprosy that Naaman had went on to Gehazi because he was greedy, like Lot. However, the king of Salem brought the blessing of God. And he blessed Abraham, saying, blessed be Abraham by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth. And blessed be God Most High, who delivered your enemies into your hands. In other words, he wants to give God the glory and the honor for the victory. And the king received from Abraham, who gave him a tenth of everything. In fact, the fact that Abraham gave Melchizedek some money, saying, I'm in with you. And Melchizedek, as you know, should do from the New Testament, is a picture of Jesus, our great high priest. Abraham knew that it was he who had been with him and enabled him to save his nephew Lot. Now he publicly thanks him. And by this payment, he's saying, look, I'm with you. It's a bit like paying the sanctuary shekel as the Israelites enter the wilderness. They were buying into God and his honor and his way and his protection. We don't have to pay money now. How do we connect with God? It's through faith. If we have a true faith in Christ, he will be your saviour and all the blessings that come from that. And notice as well, another principle just mentioned quickly before we finish. As God rescued Lot through Abraham, so also he rescued the rest of the city as well, the rest of the captives. They were Sodomites, sinners before the Lord and strangers to Abraham, who had no obligation to help them at all, but Abraham did. God is generous to all. For the sake of one man, the many are saved. How often, as the Lord watches over his people, does his hand of kindness extend to those around? Do you remember when Paul was on board the ship in the storm? 276 others were also rescued, weren't they? Because of Paul being there. And if we have unbelieving families, wives and children are considered sanctified. Not saved, but sanctified because they belong to one of God's people. So that's what God provided Abraham, the rescuer. God graciously has provided today for you a rescuer. Abraham is this man of grace. He risked his life to save one of his own. Jesus is the God of grace who risked his life, who gave his life to save his own. Lot was undeserving. He received everything as a gift. It was not through his own effort that he rescued himself. He was awaiting death. And here is a picture of what Christ has done. The undeserving receives freely the gift of life. The Lord is the great rescuer of the undeserving. Has he rescued you? Do you know about it? Can you speak about it? Can you tell other people about it? That's the sign. Different priorities, different heart. He suffered gladly and suffered greatly to rescue others from God's anger against your sin on that day of God's wrath. Now is the time to turn and look to him. So, what's the message? If you've ended up in a mess, use that to turn and humble yourself. Turn to the Lord while you can. Later on, Sodom was completely destroyed. And one day this world and everything in it and all who sin will be completely destroyed. Now is the time to take hold of a gracious, loving Saviour, to seek him. Amen.